Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Two big interviews this hour. First with Albert Almora and then with Dan Patrick. The Chicago Wolves are making big plans for their 25th anniversary. Get your season tickets now and receive exclusive benefits. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES.
Number five, Albert Almora.
Albert Almora Jr.
It's got a chance. Junior.
Center fielder for your Chicago Cubs.
And he makes the catch. What a play by Albert Almora Jr. Wow.
World Series champion.
Albert Almora scores the go-ahead run, and John, it was his heads-up base running. I'm telling you, if 10 guys were on the base, I don't know if 7 of them would have done what he did.
Talking Cubs all season long.
You're going to have to make the intro a little longer for like starting at 156, you know what I mean?
That's amazing. We're tied.
That's a good matchup for Almora.
And the 1-2, Albert.
Base hit to right, another run is in. Ron, you were just talking about the breaking balls away. That's exactly what Almora hit, and he poked it between first and second. The Cubs lead 5-2.
Albert Almora Jr.
Spectacular work by Almora Jr.
With McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score is brought to you by Shelton Fireworks, home of the big ones. And our segment with Albert Almora is sponsored by Sprint. Head to a Sprint location today to get the code to text to win a VIP experience with Albert Almora at Sluggers. Sprint works for me. We're connecting Albert Almora to a good phone in Milwaukee. He will be joining us in a matter of moments. He's hitting over 360 so far in the month of June. Had 3 hits from the leadoff spot last night.
Yeah, he's got it going on. And since we got to June, an OPS of 855. Not shabby.
Not too bad for your leadoff hitting center fielder. So it's he's been a remarkable player this season. We've loved talking to him every week on McNeil and Parkins. And we really appreciate him always going out of his way to find us a good phone connection. How's it going, Albert?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Everything's going well for us, Tico. How's the ladies' softball game going against the Brewers' wives?
Oh, well, that's why it got me a little bit, ran a little late. I just got back, and, they had fun. They lost, but it was fun to be a part of.
I heard your wife was the cleanup hitter.
She hit third. She hit third today.
Oh, third today. Okay.
Yeah.
Bad information. How'd she do?
She went 1-for-2. Yeah, she got a knock, and that's all I really wanted.
Okay. So are there scouting reports? Like, do you give her tips? How does this work?
Well, it's tough, man. It is. But I just told her to have fun, and obviously she's probably wanted her to be safe. So that was the only thing I really wanted her to do.
At least one Brewers team is able to beat a Cubs team.
All right.
Not going to comment on that.
Yeah, right. Well, you got to comment on it because we've been talking about it, and it's difficult to determine. You can't tell watching games or even when you're playing in them sometimes what's in somebody's head. But many people are wondering, Albert, if you guys, in fact, are in the Milwaukee Brewers' heads.
No, we're really two good teams. And that game yesterday was a lot of fun, so... I mean, that's all you can really ask for. They're ready to come out tonight again and play us. So that's all. We just got to take care of business tonight as well.
What was the atmosphere there like?
Honestly, the first couple innings were really electric. You know, there was a lot more Brewers fans that I've been a part of, that I've seen at that stadium. Usually in 16 and 17, it was more Cubs fans. But that first inning when they I think we grounded into a double play. That was that same time was really kind of blew up and really electric. So I was like, all right, this is going to be fun.
We've said on the show, like, by definition, they are the biggest games that you guys have played yet this year, but they're not that big because we're not even to the halfway point of the season. Obligatory question here. How do you guys look at these games in terms of importance?
We're not really pressing. We don't really care. Obviously, we want to win, and we want to. That's how our mindset is all the time. But it's not like a do or die game. You know, it's still early in regards to we're gonna play them a bunch more times, and you never know. Maybe at the end of the year, the games will have if we win, we clinch, or vice versa, whatever. So. It's a fun team to play against, man. It really is.
Well, in your experience as a major leaguer, Albert, when do you start looking at the standings and start to realize, time to get this thing cranked up?
Yeah, I think September is when you really can start seeing how far back or how many games you're in the lead or what's your magic number, that kind of thing. But before that, I think it's really irrelevant.
We're talking to Albert Almora here on The Score. So we just played something from Steve Phillips, old baseball executive, where he said back in the day when he was running the Mets that it absolutely was a thing that they felt like the Braves just had their number. And it was always going to be something, whether it was a wild pitch or an error, like something was going to lead to the Mets losing to the Braves. And you guys are 8-1 against the Brewers. In your experience, is that a thing that can happen where you just feel like when you step onto the field against a certain opponent, like you know that you have that team's number?
No, you know what? I didn't know that we were doing so well against the Brewers until someone mentioned it last night, in from the media. So it's just one of those, they're one of those teams that I feel like we're always in the game with them, and they're always battling. We scored one to tie us, and then they came right back to the bottom of the half, and then they went up. So I think we're playing really good baseball against them, and not at all. Do you think that we're gonna get a dub just for playing Milwaukee today? No, it's not like that at all.
One of the many things that's been fun about just watching you and your teammates this year, Albert. It seems like there are new heroes every time out, and it's not the same old crew who's getting the job done. And whatever Jason Hayward is eating, I hope he continues to eat it because this is the best he's looked since he joined the club.
Yeah, it's I'm super excited and happy for him, and he's been a huge part of our ball club, and not just now when he's doing well, but always, as being one of our leaders. But it's exciting, man. We're all starting to really click, and it's good. We're doing it in June instead of late in October, so it's exciting.
I think it surprises some people, and obviously everyone knows about the rain delay speech, but I think it surprises some people that you guys can all talk about Jason Hayward as a leader when he has struggled a lot offensively, but that doesn't necessarily factor into the leadership stuff, does it?
No, not at all. And plus, the way he conducts himself when he has been struggling is super pro, And that's anybody could be happy and be a leader when they're doing well. It's when you're doing, it's when you're struggling, when you're really grinding, and you're still one of the leaders. That's when you really look up to somebody.
Joe Maddon was talking with our midday guys, Bernstein and McKnight, today about his message when you're facing tougher pitchers, such as Hader last night, and maybe being a little bit more aggressive on the bases. I'm assuming that's something that settles well with you and most of your teammates who like to run a little bit?
Facing guys like that, man, you just try to find a way to score. So, if Skip says something like that, it does mean a lot, man. You got to sneak runs in when you're facing bullpen guys as good as Hader. And it was super exciting to see. When I hit that fly ball, I didn't think Ben was going to tag there, and it ended up working out for us. So it's just trying to play small ball, man. Can't do too much against those guys.
Yeah, because I struggle with the calculus on that one. The throw beat him by like 6 or 7 feet. If the second baseman catches it, he's clearly out. But I understand that you're not going to get a lot of base runners against him. So how do you weigh something like that?
I don't know. It's just instinctual, I guess, and you gotta take a gamble. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're facing a dominant pitcher like that, so the chances of us scoring are slim. So might as well just try to make the pitch.
What is it like standing in the box against a guy like that?
I mean, I played with Hader on Team USA a couple years back, and it was awesome to see and awesome to be a part of. So it's special facing guys like that, man. You want to face the best, and he's definitely proven himself this year that he is one of those top guys. So, you know, every time, I don't know if you guys know, every time I get the box, and we give it to a little nod, like, hey, man, you know, good to see you, good luck, and let's go get each other. So, that's it.
Paying a little respect there.
Who are the top two or three guys who you really have to buckle up for when you step in, Albert? Is he among them?
I don't think I've faced him enough to say that. I've only faced him maybe three at bats, but I think obviously you face the Pirates closer, Vasquez now, and you know he's a guy you have to pay to your respect to. You know, you try not to do too much, but man, nowadays every bullpen guy is so dominant in their own way. So it's tough to pinpoint one guy.
Last thing from me, Albert, and we appreciate your time from Milwaukee. Who's the fastest guy on the Cubs? If you guys all lined up for a race, who wins?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
Because I've posited that it might be Ian Happ.
Maybe Happy. You go with a Happy Javi. I don't know. We could probably do that. Settle that.
Well, please do. I'd like to know if I'm right, and I'm kind of surprised. You guys are all competitive. You know, I'm sure you golf together. You know, just get out there and run a 100-yard dash.
Yeah, we should definitely do that. I'll talk to him.
All right, thanks, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Albert, thank you.
All right, guys.
All right, that's Albert Almora with us on McNeil and Parkins.
I'm surprised he didn't have a thought on that as well. I mean, maybe he didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Yeah, I mean, it's not him.
No,
but
he'd tell you that.
Yeah, no, for sure. But I'm just saying, so maybe it's, you know, if it's not going to be him, he doesn't want to put up someone else. But I just think that game last Friday with Hap's defensive plays and just the things that Joe has to do in the outfield and getting all those guys around, I really think that that's one of Hap's strengths. Is he does get to a lot of balls. Doesn't always make the catch, doesn't always take the best route, but he does get there.
What do you suppose Jose Quintana would fit in? To this, in terms of the fastest guys on the club. You see how he runs the bases? Oh, does he get down the line in a hurry?
Quintana. You're welcome.
He just can't wait to put the jacket back on.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a great example of why there should be DHs, you know? It's just, he just looks so scared up there.
I agree. And the DH rule, I saw something earlier from one of the national writers that, you know, the young progressive National League execs are coming around on the idea of there being, you know, a designated hitter in the National League. Coming around.
What are you waiting for?
Yeah. This should happen. I don't know who.
It's remarkable it hasn't, especially given their concerns about young viewerships and slow games, because it's not always easy to get three strikes and go back to the dugout. Sometimes you have to work for that strikeout.
And you would just think in baseball as one of the things that they're trying to do to increase, they want the games to be faster, but they want to increase offense. And
yeah, is it not obvious?
Just seems like an obvious fix for half of the league. Slight improvement, 5%, 10% improvement, whatever it would be.
I never have liked not having the – I mean, it took some adjusting when it, you know, came into play in the late 1970s. It was different. It made the leagues different, but the American League is more fun to watch because it has the designated hitter.
Yeah, I never find myself when there's two runners on and the pitcher spot comes up, I never find myself being like, I really am interested to see if Kyle Hendricks can deliver in this spot.
Yeah, now Carlos Zambrano was the exception to the rule.
Of course.
Because he was entertaining, too. Because if he didn't put it in play, he was at least going to come close to blowing out an L4, L5 trying to get there.
I mean, Jake Arrieta occasionally would be an exception to the rule.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, yeah, if I get into the game, I'll just swing hard. So, yeah, I mean, sure. But Bartolo Colon, very entertaining. I don't enjoy arguing the exception rather than the rule.
It always has been remarkable to me they can't represent themselves better than they do. Because all pitchers... When you go, and I know it's Major League Baseball, spare me the obvious, but when you go back to what they did when they were younger, they were probably the best on their team at playing shortstop as well. Right-handed pitchers probably played shortstop.
Sure.
They probably hit third or fourth in the order and were the best hitters on their team. and then they get to the major leagues and maybe they don't work at it. I don't know.
Well, I mean, A, they don't work at it, and then B, the pitchers are much better.
I know that. But go up there looking like you at least have a plan. Nothing more boring than watching a clown stand there with a bat sitting on his shoulder for three straight pitches.
I agree with you. And I do think it will change because it strikes me as obvious. And Rob Manfred said he's willing to listen to good ideas and bad ideas. And I think that is an overwhelmingly good idea. We got Dan Patrick, your old buddy, coming up at 2:30. It's another Bulls dynasty anniversary. He was certainly around those teams. We're back well before that, though, on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Our guys are like loose cannons in the dugout. There are no tight butts. It's kind of interesting to listen to the conversation, even in a tight game. They're in the present tense, and that's all I could ask for.
Joe Madden, audio from NBC Sports Chicago. It's brought to you by Indeed. Are you hiring with Indeed? You can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates and an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire.
The Cubs indeed are living in the present, as Joe Madden suggests there, but isn't part of what makes our present our past? And in the case of the Cubs, lots of experience, lots of postseason experience. And that's why they are prepared mentally for a long haul of a baseball team and don't look at series that begin on the 11th of June as critical.
Yeah. I mean, Albert Almora was straight up dismissive of the idea when I said, hey, we're saying it's the biggest game to date, but not that big of a deal. And he was like, I didn't even think of it that way.
It's irrelevant until September.
Yeah.
That's basically what he said. He used the word irrelevant.
Yeah. And that's,
wow.
And that's how players think.
Yeah. Until they're 10 games back of the lead.
Right, but it's also how players who have won think. And, like, we aren't going to go down this hypothetical with them, but we've talked about it as a show before. If they had not won in Game 7 in 2016, everything about the Cubs is being done with a different calculus.
Mm-hmm.
The pressure would be so much bigger, moves would have been different, and everything would have felt like, when are they going to break the curse? When are they going to break the drought? And just the tension around everything would have just grown and grown and grown.
You know, Albert has been reluctant every time we've given him a little bit of an opening to criticize an opponent or anything remotely that could be constructed as critical of somebody. He takes a pass on it. I wanted so bad to ask him about Ryan Braun's catch last night and whether he does the eye roll whenever he sees an outfielder make a tough catch look like an incredible catch, because that was an example of it last night.
That would have been a good question.
And, well, I don't think he would have taken it, though.
Neither do I.
And the tell was bad.
That too.
We don't have guys like that around here, though. We don't have Ryan Braun's or Jim Edmonds types. I can't think of any recent, and recent being the last couple years, where anybody has, see, we used to call it hot dogging in the 70s. That's a term that didn't survive. Showboating.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
And, I mean, there's some showmanship that goes to it, too. Just liking the dive because it's cool and it's more likely to get you on a highlight or something like that.
Jim Edmonds used to set up 20 feet before he needed to before he made a break on the ball.
Yeah, and would play super shallow. He's high up on the list of opponent baseball players that, as a fan, I hated because of that. It's like, ah, you smug son of a... You know
he had
I mean?
Jerk face.
No question.
Even when he was here.
And that's coming from me.
He didn't lose the face. What do you mean that's coming from you? You don't have jerk face.
I've been accused of having a punchable face.
No.
You don't
punchable
think
punchable face and jerk face are two different things, though.
Are they?
I think so. Like, there's some people that, like, you see
everyone
their face and you're like,
mic.
It's kind of punchable, but I don't think the guy's a jerk.
And this guy knows about jerk faces, folks. Shep?
Well, I'm guilty. Yeah. Guilty on all counts of big time jerk face.
Hmm. Okay,
like,
so
I just think that there's some that like you take away and you're like, yeah, that guy seems like a jerk. And there's other, it's just your face. I want to punch it. Well, is there something I can do about it? No, it's just your face. Okay. Well, I'll work on that.
Understand.
For you.
I don't find that to be the case with any of you guys, fortunately. I don't know how you feel about me, but I always have thought jerk face and punch me face are twins.
So who's in this list?
AJ Pierzynski. I like AJ.
Yeah.
But he's got punch me face.
But how much of it is also personality? Because he's got a little bit of punch me personality. Same thing with Jay Cutler.
But before he spoke a word, you wanted to slap him.
Okay.
Right? And Jay Cutler with his smirk.
What about Matt Stafford? I've always kind of put him in the same, like, he looks like he does a lot of keg stands.
I was going to say, he's got kind of like inflated face. Not so much like punch me face.
He's got country bumpkin face, doesn't he? As much as anything?
Yeah, well, so I'm just looking for parallels here. I'm wondering, like, is keg stand face more akin to jerk face, punch me face, the same thing? I don't know the answer to that. Let's call Albert Almora back. I'm sure he'll be willing to throw his teammates under the bus on that one. Who's got the most punchable face on the Cubs?
On the Cubs, like, the most punchable face in town ever had to have been Cutler, right?
Again, though, that was personality-based.
Yeah, but his face was like... I mean, that's what you always centered on. Was
smoking
his,
Cutler. Right. I always will see
like his
smoking.
Face and his emotionless look on the sidelines, whether they had just won a game or had just thrown five interceptions against Green Bay.
Yes, I agree. I just think that with Cutler, we're conflating it a little bit into attitude.
Yeah.
Because he'd come off and the helmet would be casually resting, and you didn't know if he had, you know, did I throw a pick? Did I throw
right,
a touchdown?
Right. Ho-hum. Yeah. La, la, la. Technically, Shep, it was only four interceptions against Green Bay.
Oh, five was the Niners. My bad. How can I confuse
you? You're right. It was, yes, it was that. Was it a Thursday night game against the Niners? Or no, the
it
Thursday
was.
Night game was the one. Was it Thursday?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Okay.
If I remember right, he had a Thursday night game in Green Bay that there were four. There was a Thursday night game in San Francisco where there were five. Oh, there's so many to count.
There was also a game against the 49ers in Northern California where he was unavailable and Jason Campbell started. Jason
and that's when
Campbell,
he had like nine sacks or whatever against him, right? Alden Smith's coming out party.
Yes, yes, that was a tough night for the Bears.
Yeah.
Cuddy.
Exactly. So we're going to call your guy Dan Patrick.
Yes, that's here. What we do to get him on.
And well, yes, I understand that, but I'm just curious, the backstory with you and Dan Patrick, set it up for our audience.
Well, it was 25 years ago, I guess right around this week, when we were in Phoenix with the Bulls for title number 3, and that's when Dan's friendship with this radio station was born. Terry Bors and I were doing our show in a hotel lobby.
Wow.
And it was a media hotel, and Dan was scheduled to be on the show a little bit later on, but he and Dr. Jack Ramsey just happened to be coming back from a media session and saw us. So Dan sits down and slaps on the headphones and just stares at us for the first 15 minutes. And we had talked to him on the show before, but we'd never met him face-to-face. This was our first face-to-face meeting in Phoenix, and he's just sitting across the table from us. And I tried to talk to him during a break. I take my headset off and lean over, and he's listening to the guest. I think it was Ed Neely of the Bulls who was on.
Sure.
But that's when the Scores relationship with Dan was born, and it was... I guess you say augmented again in Seattle in 96 and 97 and 98 in Salt Lake City. And Dan joins us right now on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Hello, Dan Patrick.
He's listening to the show.
Hi, Mac.
How is the most successful sports talk show host in America feeling today? I know you're going to miss your Sleep Number bed tonight in New York, but...
Everything's great. It's all great. The sun is out, stuck in traffic. I'd have it no other way.
Okay. It's good to have you back on board. And, you know, I want to start you with some basketball. I know you're hot for NBA free agency. This is the one town that really, by and large, doesn't want any conversation regarding LeBron James because there are too many people stuck in the 90s who don't want to accept his greatness. Dan, that probably doesn't surprise you.
No, it surprised me years ago when Kobe wasn't afraid of the legacy and, you know, welcomed the possibility of going to Chicago. But LeBron may wear number 23, but he has no interest in following in those footsteps. And, you know, Chicago doesn't have anything really in place that would entice LeBron in the first place. I mean, it feels like we should tell everybody the teams that don't have a chance with LeBron, because it feels like there are more teams that feel like they do have a chance, and Chicago is not one of those teams.
Do you have a gut on where he's going?
I think Los Angeles. I think that although I can look at it and find fault with all of these, I thought he might stay one more year in Cleveland and then sort of see what happens in Los Angeles, what happens in Philadelphia, what happens in Boston. if Kyrie wants to get out and go to the Knicks. Does Philadelphia add anything? Does Paul George go to the Lakers? You know, what pieces do they add? But, you know, maybe he's going to jump in a year early because I don't think they're going to contend. And you have to go against Golden State and Houston far more times than you did when you were in the East. So that's surprising, but I think if he's saying what he really believes, and that is this is quality of life and it's about my kids, okay. But he's also said it's about championships, and I don't know if you can have it both ways right now.
Is that best case scenario for the NBA if he revives the Lakers?
Well, then you're going to be really heavy on the West, Dan. And I think that that's a concern because then it's Boston and Philly. And if they prove to be super teams, then great. But if not, then you're going to have another watered down NBA Finals. And, you know, as much as Adam Silver would love to see Philly and Boston back in the mix, and Los Angeles, if you don't have a competitive NBA Finals, then I think we're going to look at this and go, that wasn't the best for the NBA. And not that LeBron has to acquiesce to anybody and go, boy, I got to do what's best for the NBA. Let me go to, let me stay in the East. Let me stay in Cleveland. He's going to do what's best for him. But if he revitalizes a third franchise, or not revitalize, that's a little too strong. But if you win a title in Cleveland, a couple in Miami, and then you go to Los Angeles and somehow win a championship there, that differentiates you from anything Michael Jordan ever did. And, Mac, I know you listen to my show, and I got to the point where I can't get into the debate anymore because it's just silly after a while. They're different players, but LeBron, I think LeBron can have a fuller resume than Michael. Doesn't mean he's better, but he's different, and I think that that's probably what he's hoping for right now. He'll never match 6-0, but he could be different, and I think that's what he's going for.
Dan Patrick is with us on The Score on the McNeil and Parkin Show, Sports Radio 670. One of a handful of highlights I had in my 16 months on the FM side doing mornings a few years ago was Dan requesting Foghat music at 5:45 in the morning. He wouldn't get off the phone until he heard something from Foghat. I'm not the only dinosaur in the room, Parkins.
You guys are old.
Yeah, we are.
I had that album, where there's a guy fishing in a manhole cover and with Pool for the City. And
yes.
I don't even know why I said more Foghat or give me more Foghat. It just kind of appeared because that's not even one of my favorite bands. But I thought, you know what? Give me some Foghat and Pool for the City.
Yeah, it was perfect. You're more of a Zeppelin guy historically.
No, I was lucky. I had a pretty good run there with bands that had staying power. So the Who, Stones, Zeppelin, Bowie,
yep.
Aerosmith. Those bands are still around in some remnants. Some form, and I'm pretty lucky with that.
Yes, we grew up in a decent time for music. These millennials, they just have to live off of us vicariously. I want to ask you about this Warriors dynasty. Does it have the same sizzle? And we need a national perspective on this. Does it have the same sizzle that the Bulls dynasty, and you could pick one of the three, Pete's, if you wanted to break them down, since the Warriors have won three of the last four. Same sizzle? More sizzle? Less? How would you rank them?
Well, I looked at the Bulls differently because, as you know, we were up close and personal with that group, and to see what we saw, how we saw it, how fans reacted, and reacted on the road, people didn't dislike the Bulls. They were fascinated with the Bulls. It's almost like, hey, our team lost to the Bulls. There was a badge of honor if you were able to compete with them, go to the finals against them. But I never felt like there was this animosity towards Jordan or when Dennis joined them or they brought in Kukoc, somehow this is unfair. I thought people were fascinated with the Bulls because it was something we had never seen before. Golden State, they were the underdog, great story, fun. You had a style that we all loved, and then they added Kevin Durant, and then that changed everything. So I think there's an asterisk by this you had to bring in Durant to become a dynasty. You know, you weren't going to become a you might not have become a dynasty if he didn't join you. But, I mean, he joined a team that won 73 games. I mean, come on. You know, it's kind of add water and stir, and you have your dynasty there. I think we appreciate the teams that were built in a way that it didn't feel – like Golden State's built differently, and I think that's where you have this pushback from fans, acknowledging their greatness but begrudgingly.
Right. They drafted Draymond. They drafted Clay. They drafted Steph, and they won, and they set a wins record, and that all felt great and fun, and we rooted for them.
Yeah.
And then they signed Kevin Durant because of a CBA loophole, and we're like, all right, now it's a cheat code. We're talking to Dan Patrick, by the way, here on The Score. You said up close and personal. I was a kid during the 90s, just as a fan. I want some Dan Patrick and Dan McNeil stories on the road, the ones that can't air or the ones that borderline can air, of you guys on the road with the Bulls in the 90s.
Dan, you want to go first?
I never asked my first wife, Jill, what happened when I loaned her to you for a night.
What?
That was in Salt Lake. Seattle was just a flat-out gas. Seattle was, and all of the Super Bowls, too. None bigger than New Orleans when we were at the Jazz Bar, and we were all three sheets to the wind. And the piano player recognized a celebrity in the crowd, a very large black man, and he introduced Dan Jiggetts as Rosie Greer.
We never got cheated, though.
No.
I look back, and Phoenix, Seattle, I loved. Even Salt Lake City, we somehow made that work. The New Orleans visit, and I just laughed. I love nothing better than just hearing you, or if it was Terry Bors, like just you guys were really funny and told great stories. Bernstein, he'd do a Scottie Pippen impersonate.
Yep.
It was just fun. It was just really, really a fun time. And I was covering history, and to be able to interview Jordan after every one of those championships, I mean, it's something that, it's on the resume there of great moments I was able to cover. But I was there with great friends too.
Yeah, our job was to just be your muse. That's what we were.
Yeah, you guys were there to entertain me when I wasn't on the air. I'd see you guys later, and you did. You guys were as good as Jordan was in those NBA finals.
Stop.
Oh, God.
Stop. I love
hear that one for a while.
That's the old you. That was the different Mac, right?
Yeah, I guess. I guess I've mellowed a little bit. I guess I've slowed down a little bit.
You haven't loaned me your second wife?
No, I haven't.
I forgot about you giving me your wife for a night.
Yeah, well, I never asked.
And he's not sharing.
As long as it wasn't Bill Pito, that would have upset me. That would have made me mad. Yeah, you brought something up today that, I didn't think we'd wind up talking about this, but when you were talking today, reflecting on the golden era of SportsCenter with you and Keith, and when the Bristolites were billing $400 million for that show, and that sort of marking to a degree the beginning of the end. It did for Keith, you talked about. You got another book in you, man. You need to write again.
No, I've been asked about it. I just moved on. I have to move on as best I can, because I don't try to relive the great moments there, even though we had about a 5-year window that it was pretty awesome. We had a whole lot of fun, but I just had to move on because I thought it was always weighing me down there. And I don't want to hurt anybody or bring up anything that might damage me as well, but I survived, and I'm glad of it. Glad, proud that's where I worked for 18 years, but man, no book, gosh, no. Maybe a movie, but no book.
Well, I was going to say, what's the next acting performance?
I don't know. I just did one with Sandler, and the next one's the magical one for some reason. I think this would be my 14th or 15th, and then he owes me a car. I don't know how I finagled that, but I said, look, you bought Chris Rock, and you bought Schneider and Spade, Kevin James cars. when do I get my car? And he goes, the next movie. And I said, oh, wow, he's serious. I said, okay. And he goes, no, the next movie you get a car. So I don't know what it is, when it is, but I get a car.
Do you get the same caliber car as Rock and Schneider? I mean, you got cameos.
No, probably not. I think Schneider got a Tesla, and the other guys got, like, Jaguars or Lamborghinis or, like, you know, Sandler, he took care of them. But yeah. I said, look, I think I've been there for you longer than they have, more consistently. Like, they go out and do other things. I don't see another, you know, actor behind your back. You know, I could venture off with Will Ferrell, but I don't. I'm loyal to you. Little did he know, Will Ferrell's never asked me to be in a movie. But Sandler knows he's going to pay me for loyalty, and I appreciate that.
He's kind of legendary in that way, right? In terms
he's
of
unbelievable. I tell people, and you know, you meet some big time people. He has been as generous as anybody I've ever met. He's generous with the guys I work with my family, with people who have been friends. As Rob Schneider said, once you're in, you're in. You know, if you want to be, you can be in for the rest of your life. And he's very, very generous, and I can't say enough nice things about him.
Dan, we'll let you run. Thank you for the visit. We appreciate it. You coming to town this summer? We're overdue on getting out on the golf course and singing songs about being in the bunker.
What's your ex-wife doing?
She has a man now, Dan.
Oh, okay. All right.
I can ask. Okay. I can ask. She and Brian might be into that sort of thing. I don't know.
What's your
my current? My Sherry. You know Sherry. You met Sherry.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, she made the traveling squad.
I don't know if there was magic when I met her, but you know, I could do a drive by.
Come in town.
Get your ass to town. You can sing. You can sing the stretch again. The Cubs are a juggernaut. You'd enjoy yourself.
Oh yeah, I know. But hey, I really meant that. That I never had as much fun as I did when I was with you guys. I really laughed hard, and so I'm glad you brought it up because I was glad to be able to contribute to that in some way. But you know, thank you for the fun. It was a whole lot of fun on the road with you guys.
Thanks, bud. Have a good day.
Thanks for the time.
All right, man. Thank you, guys.
We'll see you.
It's Dan Patrick from The Dan Patrick Show. Man, if that segment doesn't spur some follow-up questions and can't do it next time we have it, I am very disappointed with this audience. And I will ask some of my own because we're way late coming up on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
My wife.
Yeah.
So you lent Dan Patrick your wife in Utah?
I was tired, so I was going to go back to the hotel. They stayed out for a little while.
Nice.
I never asked many questions about it. I assumed everything was, you know, on the up and up.
She came back eventually.
Yeah, she came back before morning.
Before morning. All right. So you guys really did find the fun in Utah.
Like, well, we were in Utah, right? Damn. So why not share why?
When in Rome.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Sounds good.
Now, I think they just had a few more drinks, is all.
Yeah, sure.
You know me. I know when to say when. Always have.
Yeah, I'm just saying. So Dan McNeil tapped out early and Dan Patrick and the wife. Okay, good. That's a hell of an image you've created there. It's cool to hear. So he was the big TV star at the time, and then he would slum it with the radio guys back at the hotel bar.
Well, at the NFL, and you have yet to go. Hopefully we go this coming February or January, late January, leading up to the Super Bowl. Super Bowl week is a cluster F.
I've been once.
Millions of people are there. But NBA Finals. Now, I don't know if there was another radio outfit broadcasting from any of those NBA Finals other than the crew from Chicago that was traveling, and that was all of us.
God.
It was Jiggins and North, Boers and Bernstein, or I'm sorry, me and Boers, and Bernstein as a beat guy, and of course Les, because he has all the frequent flyer miles. That's his hobby, you might remember.
Yeah, I do remember that, yeah. So the whole crew was there.
We were all out there. And
I noticed he didn't mention Les as a riot at the bar.
I don't know if he was aware. I think Dan wasn't with us when Bernstein and I did the pantsing of Les on his overnight show because we were in, air quotes, Free Harbor. Do whatever you want. You're in Free Harbor. That was the catchphrase in the late 90s for say whatever you want after hours.
Free Harbor or Safe Harbor?
That's right. Safe Harbor.
Don't let facts get in the way.
Safe Harbor, Free Harbor. I'd never heard it until then, and I haven't used it since. Now it's just no, don't say it.
Don't say it. That's fine. No, it's very cool that you guys have that relationship, and you can hear from him that it's genuine towards you. He's not just doing you a favor. That's cool.
Yeah. I hope that's not the case. I hope he's being genuine.
You could tell.
Yeah. I mean, he's been in my hotel room before. I hope he doesn't just, you know, he's not using me.
We've got a lot of follow-up questions here. We'll get to it and can't do it. Dan Patrick, I'm sure, will become a friend of the show. I got an NBA theory that's floating around in my head about the Bulls. I want to run it by Jep or Mac or whoever will listen. It's coming up on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.